Jeff Brecht, and Jeff's the director of the Center for Food Distribution and Retailing at the University of Florida. They bring agricultural scientists and engineers together with companies involved in the distribution and selling of perishable foods to conduct multidisciplinary research. And as that director, he interacts with commodity associations, packers, shippers, distributors, importers, exporters, processors, retailers, etc., the whole vertical chain. Dr. Brecht is also a professor and post-harvest extension specialist, as most of us know him as well, for many years, University of Florida, teaching the course Principles of Post-Harvest Horticulture. His primary research interests revolve around the development of new technologies and practices in the distribution systems to enhance fruit and vegetable quality. He has authored over 300 technical publications, including over 130 refereed journal papers. He was named the University of Florida Research Foundation Professor in 2002 and a fellow of the Society here in 2006. And Jeff is going to discuss how we conduct transportation research.
Thank you, John. You're going to see when I start my talk that Mary Lou and I thought quite a bit alike in how to approach our subjects, because we both said you can't look at anything in isolation. What I'm going to do, similar as well to her focusing on avocado, one crop, I'm going to focus on mango and a project that we did. It was actually a University of Florida, University of California project that Mary Lou was involved in. And I'm going to talk about this project in the context of an approach that we've been taking mainly since forming the Center for Food Distribution and Retailing, which was actually formed by myself and Jean-Pierre Rimond, who's going to be the fourth speaker today when he was at UF. He left the university a while back, and we're still carrying on, not as active as it used to be when JP was around. But this, we did a project 2007 to 2009 that was funded by the National Mango Board, and the idea was to survey the harvest and handling practices for mangoes coming from the various exporting countries to the U.S., with the ultimate deliverable to be a manual of best post-harvest handling practices recommendations to the industry. So we documented how mangoes are handled in the different exporting countries that are sending them to the U.S. So this manual is available through the UF EDIS website in English and Spanish and Portuguese. And you can see the collaborators here. It included Steve Sargent as well as Mary Lou here in the audience. Beth Mitchum and the late Adel Cater, Fernando Mal in Guatemala, El Hadi Yahia in Mexico, Maria Auxiliadora Lima also in Brazil were part of the project. These are the people at the bottom who put together the manual. Okay, how do I? There we go. So the main point is that if you're doing transportation research, you can't do it in isolation. You have to understand the system. You have to understand how different practices before and after transportation can affect the outcome of a shipping test. This is a process map for mangoes, and without going into all the details, the point is to show the complexity of the system. There are some transportation points. There's a transportation domestically from the point of production to, in most cases, the mangoes coming from Central and South America are going by ocean voyage, so they go to a container port, and so there's varying distances of transportation there. As they move along, you have the actual ocean shipment when they reach the port, you've got movement from an importer to an exporter, and finally you have delivery to the stores, different distances, usually from a distribution center to retail stores. So there's different aspects of transportation that you can look at. And what I'm going to do is go through the system for mangoes, just making comments about how different aspects of the harvesting and handling practices can affect transportation research. So, as I said, we had funding from the National Mango Board. We had a team of scientists from the U.S., Mexico, Guatemala, and Brazil. We brought in the mango export associations in Ecuador, Peru, and Brazil we were working with. We had cooperating growers, packers, and shippers, as well as importers in the U.S. who cooperated with us on this. And in general, what we're trying to do now is include participants who have expertise that is going to help you understand the system. So that can include not just post-harvest physiologists like most of us, but the horticulturists, people responsible for growing the crop, food science and food safety related expertise, plant pathology, agricultural engineering, packaging, logistics, economics. Economics is something that we've tried to incorporate in our projects more than I ever used to before. I realize that as post-harvest physiologists, we're usually really good at telling people what's the best way to do something, the optimum temperature, the best pre-cooling method, the best packaging. But if we're asked what does that cost, the answer is usually just a blank look. We don't think about that. So we've been trying to do more return on investment type of work associated with our projects, and that is not very easy either, because collecting that information on what the actual costs are to commercial enterprises is really difficult. It's a rare company that's willing to share with you what their costs are for their operations and their materials, but we try that. So we need to understand the whole system. With transport being in the middle, and you have upstream, you have downstream, the growing and the harvesting operations, the packing house operations, the cooling, the container loading, the port operations. The other end, at the other end of transportation, you have more port of entry procedures, APHIS inspection, treatments. That's mainly what J.P. Mond will be talking about. And then the practices of the importers and retailers as well. So the idea is to consider, before trying to conduct a shipping test, what effect could different upstream practices have on the response to the process change or the treatment, whatever it is that you're trying to investigate in your study. What effect could that process change also have downstream on the processes that follow transportation? So with mangoes, they're harvested when the fruit have reached full size and begun to ripen. But like avocados, you can't really look at a mango and tell, okay, it's full size. You can sort of tell by the shape, but has it begun to ripen? You have to cut it open to see the internal color development. So the only way to do that is to take a subsample of fruit from the orchard and cut them and get an idea of what the distribution of maturities is before you go in and harvest. So there's the detachment. They have to be desapped because they'll squirt latex out when you remove them from the tree, which can stain the surface of the fruit. So they have to sit and drain for a bit before they're put into crates to be carried to the packing house. The harvest maturity is extremely important. It's going to be the most important thing determining the final quality of the fruit. So you have to know something about that with the fruit that you're going to be including in your transportation experiment. Either pre-select a uniform lot, or at least cut a number of fruits so that you know what the distribution of maturities was initially before your shipment. Transport to the packing house. Some of this I can go through sort of quick because Mary Lou did a good job covering these things, protecting them from injury, from vibration and bumps, also from exposure to the sun. At the packing house, one of the things we found in Peru is since there were only four packing houses certified for export shipments during the peak of the season, there was a huge volume of mangoes coming into those packing houses, such that they had trucks that were parked outside the packing house waiting, mangoes waiting for their turn to go through up to 2 days, just sitting in trucks waiting to go through the packing house. So obviously you need to know where how your mangoes were handled in regard to things like that. So there's a reception at the packing house. There's a quality control inspection, which typically involves cutting fruit to see what the mix of maturities are so that they can give feedback to the field crews if they're picking fruit too early, too late. Phytosanitary inspection. Mangoes are subject to quarantine treatment for fruit flies. Hot water quarantine treatment is 46 degree water for 60 to 110 minutes, depending on the size and shape of the fruit. So you're starting off with fruit that are not only picked with typically fairly warm field conditions, but then they all get heated to 46 degrees before you go any further. So subsequent temperature management, cooling and temperature management is very important. The APHIS protocol allows hydrocooling to follow the hot water treatment under certain conditions, so I won't go into the details. So some packers do that and some don't, so the hydrocooling isn't universally used. And then there's another practice sometimes used that they call resting the fruit, where they set them aside after the hot water treatment for up to overnight, which actually we found was the most common practice. And in essence, what they're doing is they're allowing hot water injury symptoms to appear so that before the fruit go through the grading process on the packing line, they'll be able to see those injury symptoms and remove those fruit. One of the surprising things that we found is the grading was actually very rudimentary. The fruit are they're observed, they're hand sized mostly. There are some automatic packaging, but we were really surprised how little grading was being done, and it took a while before we got the information we needed about what was going on. It turns out most of the mangoes exported to the United States are sold on consignment. So it means that when those fruit are packed and shipped, the shipper does not know who the customer is going to be to buy the fruit. That's determined by the importer upon arrival. So what that means is that they have an incentive to try and ship everything possible in the hopes that the market, when those fruit arrive, is going to be such that you can sell any mango you've got. But what we saw happening at the importer's facility was a lot of mangoes going into dumpsters because they would literally have to take the pallets apart carton by carton, resort the mangoes to the customer's specifications on the spot as they found customers. So, for example, the public supermarket chain in Florida requires their mangoes to have at least 60% blush on the surface for no particular reason that they think that people will like that better. So the importers literally have to resort the fruit so that they only have fruit in the cartons that have at least 60% red blush on them. Well, for the mango varieties that have red blush. So after the packing, there's cooling. Another variable process, they should be forced air cooled quickly to 12 degrees. We saw that happening sometimes, but not other times. They're sometimes held temporarily, but typically that's just a storage in name only, just to accommodate the schedules at the ports, because we don't have container vessels leaving the port on a daily basis or anything close to that. So the mangoes that are harvested daily may have to be held for 1 or even up to 2 weeks, depending on the vessel schedules. So we found this to be the most variable part of the handling. It was the cooling, how it was done, how well it was done. A lot of forced air cooling that was more or less in name only. Might as well have been room cooling. We saw some mangoes in Mexico that were being harvested very close to the border, so the packing house didn't seem to think that temperature management was much of an issue. So they were packing pretty hot mangoes into a truck trailer that didn't even have the refrigeration system turned on. They had a cold room that they didn't have the refrigeration turned on. They were using it to store boxes. So they were doing no pre-cooling at all and then trucking them about a day and a half to the border with the U.S. So that was one extreme. The other extreme we saw was in Brazil, which has the longest shipping time. They were doing a great job of cooling, but they were cooling the fruit below the chilling temperature and shipping the mangoes at 7 to 9 degrees in some cases when the chilling threshold temperature is 12. So they were really cooling them down to try and have the condition look good at the other end. Because what I like to say is no loads of mangoes ever get rejected for the fruit being too hard and too green. But they will be rejected if there's any soft, bruised, decayed fruit, which is what you're risking if you start off with more mature fruit and don't carry them at lower temperatures. But, of course, those fruit are going to have chilling injury if you use the temperatures like this. And that's what we see a lot with the fruit from South America. Loading onto the transport vehicles themselves, there's proper ways to do this. Loading into a container so you have a block of product that doesn't allow the bottom air, refrigerated air, to bypass the load but force it to go through the containers vertically. Not going above the red line to allow enough space for air circulation. There's a red line painted near the ceiling of the container that you shouldn't stack above. Ethylene absorbers, CA, I'm not going to get into details. I think our next speaker is going to talk more about details of the type of equipment that's used. There's very minor use of MA or CA containers. It's really just a matter of logistics. There's only a limited number of containers with those features available in the whole worldwide fleet. Maybe 10,000 out of more than 250,000. I'm just sort of picking numbers that I'm guessing. It's a very, very small amount, so it's not a normal practice. There's not enough of those containers to handle the mango volume from any of the exporting countries. So the containers are accumulated at a port container facility until they're loaded onto the vessel. I mentioned the scheduling. They have to match the container delivery to the port with the vessel shipping schedules, and that adds more delay. So when we talk about shipping times, maybe the shipping time on the water is 2 weeks, but the mangoes may actually be taking 3 weeks from the time they're harvested to the time they arrive because of this kind of scheduling. So here's just a couple of examples. We followed up the project with some directed shipping tests trying to demonstrate different things, like what was the consequence of doing a poor job of pre-cooling versus doing a better job of pre-cooling. What's the consequences of sending mangoes that are not fully mature or that are below the chilling threshold. So just a couple of examples of this kind of thing. We did sort of temperature mapping. This is a two-day truck shipment from Sinaloa, Mexico to Texas. The set point in the trailer was 10 degrees. Again, mangoes shouldn't be held below 12 degrees. But in this case, they did such a variable job of pre-cooling the fruit that we actually documented that there were fruit on the same trailer varying from 7 degrees to 29 degrees when it was loaded. And what you can see here in the figure is that the temperatures variation that you saw at the beginning of the 2 days, it's still there at the end of the 2 days as well. So the reefer unit in a trailer is not going to cool the load. That's something we all know. Here's the other extreme. This is one shipment that went from Brazil to New Jersey that we tracked. 20 days on the water, and the set point was again 10 degrees. In this case, the fruit pulp temperatures ranged from 9 to 11 degrees, and so you can see here that this mouse to work. They started out 9 to 11 degrees. The set point was 10, so the temperature pretty much didn't change the whole time they were in the container. and the samples of those fruit didn't, in fact, actually show chilling injury symptoms on arrival. We took some from New Jersey, brought them back to Gainesville, to the university, let them ripen up or attempt to ripen up. Okay, so getting closer to the end now, what happens at the importer facility? There's a QC inspection initially before the trailer or container is unloaded. There's the reworking that I mentioned before relating to the consignments sales. As they find customers, they have to rework the fruit. And this is actually, these are mangoes being resorted in an importer facility. At the retailer's distribution center, the mangoes are going to be handled in different ways. They may have an area in the DC which is their tropical fruit area, or they may think that they want to keep their mangoes from getting soft, so they'll put them in a cooler area. We found mangoes being held anywhere from 5 to 20 plus degrees in the DCs. Mangoes are not typically ripened like bananas or some avocados. There's a few people trying to do that. Actually, as a follow-on to this project, Carlos Crisosto at UC Davis did some work looking at ripening of mangoes. And the result of his study was if the mangoes were mature, which is defined as ripening initiated at the time they're harvested, obviously there's no point in treating them with ethylene to ripen because they're already ripening. So if you need ethylene to ripen mangoes, that probably means you started off with fruit that were picked too early. And then we're down to delivery to the retail stores. So the mangoes come in container and truckload basis, and then they're sent out in mixed loads to fill the retail store's individual deliveries. We found some of them being held at ambient temperature because typically a store has a back room that's something like 7 to 10 degrees, and then other than that, it's just whatever the ambient temperature is. But we actually saw some mangoes that were being put into a 5-degree back room as well. So again, variability there. So my point is that if you're doing transportation research, you need to control all of these variables, and you can't control variables upstream and downstream if you don't know what they are. So you have to familiarize yourself with the system. Bring in people who are familiar with how the product is handled. Almost by definition, if you're doing international shipping tests, you probably don't live in the country where the product is coming from. So you need to get people who know the system involved in helping you. Some of the related research that came out of this project was we looked at how harvest maturity affects susceptibility to hot water injury and chilling injury. We did with Fernando Moll and Cecilia Nunez. We did chilling injury time temperature studies with the different mango varieties. We looked at how the temperature management post hot water hydrocooling, the pre-cooling method, and the transport temperatures affect mango quality. Those were some of the shipping tests that we did immediately after the survey of the handling. And currently we have a project going on looking at the possible cause of a physiological disorder that inconsistently, intermittently pops up in mangoes from Ecuador and Peru primarily that I've heard reports on. It's an internal discoloration called corte negro. There's pictures here. And our hypothesis right now is that it's a chilling injury symptom, but it seems to not occur all the time, probably because the fruit have to be predisposed in some way to develop it. But I have yet to hear a case of the symptoms being seen until after some kind of refrigerated storage or transport. So I'm working with Bruce Schaefer and Jonathan Crane at our Tropical Research and Education Center. We've got collaborators in Ecuador and Peru who have field trials underway looking at elevated nitrogen and reduced calcium applications in the field, and then they're doing the storage experiments at packing house for us to see if we can get the fruit to develop the symptoms. So that all came out of the initial project. And again, these are the collaborators I mentioned at the beginning. Octavio Menical and Malky Pata were technicians working with us, and then the Mango Board, APEM, FME, EMEX, Valexport are all the export associations in Peru, Ecuador, Mexico, Brazil, and then all the other industry people who collaborated with us. And that's all.
A couple of minutes still for quick questions. If anyone has something for Jeff?
Why don't they just pack them in bigger boxes or whatever? If they know they're going to repack them later, why bother?
Yeah, that occurred to us also. Why don't they just put them in bulk cartons or even field bins if that's happening? But the reworking that's done in the importer's facility is done on a very small scale, just like one truckload at a time, and they're not willing to scale up and become a packing house themselves, and that seems to be the reason, but it would seem to make sense. Well, yeah. There's the importer would have to have the correct cartons to go along with the exporter and keep that identity. You're right, which they're not willing to do as part of the same. Yeah.
Comment on that from the shipper side. We used to be one of the biggest mango importers in the United States, and it's a very small portion of the fruit that's repacked on arrival. Mm-hmm. There is some that's repacked in the United States, less than 2% for color. For specific customers, generally you're repacking because of quality problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's hot water damage, chrome damage, black spots, those kinds of overripe on the food.
Right.
Other comment, too, on your temperatures in Fahrenheit terms, if you drop below 50, if we had overripe fruit come in, we would put it at 48, that stops below 48.
Mm-hmm.
So 48 Fahrenheit, you stop ripening, 47, you kill the fruit.
Yeah, that relates to the physiology of chilling injury. As the fruit ripen, they become tolerant of lower and lower temperatures. But the problem we were seeing was people using the greenest fruit possible and the lowest temperature possible to try and have good appearance at the other end, and that's causing quality problems. Yeah. Yeah.
weren't the less mature fruit more susceptible to chilling injury than the more mature fruit?
Yes, correct. It's a double whammy. The less mature fruit are more susceptible to chilling injury, but also the hot water injury. So you hear a lot of bad mouthing of the hot water treatment and the USDA scientists who developed it, but the only problem is they developed it with fully mature fruit and didn't anticipate the industry was going to apply it to immature fruit. And that's where the problems come from.
Jeff,
yeah.
How about irradiation? Because I've heard that if now fruit and nuts are being irradiated,
have you guys looked at it? I know that there was a pilot project last year's Mexico season, and there were some fruit irradiated. There's an irradiation facility. I don't know what the volume is, but I know my brother already had a case with mangoes from that facility that had irradiation injury. So, you know, it works, but it becomes more and more difficult as you scale it up because of, well, the technical issues.
One more real quick.
What are cultivar differences?
Oh, were there differences?
Cultivar differences.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When we did the follow-up study on the time temperature thing, it was a different cultivars. The Ataulfo is much more susceptible than the other varieties. There's minor differences. Tommy Atkins is more tolerant. Kent and Kit are in the middle between, and Hayden was the other one we looked at. But Tommy Atkins, less susceptible. Ataulfo, more susceptible. That's generally what we saw.
Thank you very much, Jeff.